Recently, the United Nations International Telecommunication Union, ITU, estimated a skills shortfall of over 2 million jobs in the information and communication technologies, ICT sector, within the next 5 years. ICT is the fastest growing field, and girls and young women who learn coding, apps development, and computer science will be well placed for a successful career in the ICT sector. Furthermore, ICT skills are rapidly becoming a substantial advantage for students in any other field they might choose to pursue. Still, the proportion of women using the internet globally amounts to 48% compared to 55% of men. In relative terms, this means that the global internet use gender gap stands at 12.5%. If women cannot access the internet and feel safe online, they are consequently unable to develop the necessary digital skills and engage in digital spaces. These barriers, in turn, diminish their opportunities to pursue careers in STEM-related fields. It is also worth mentioning that the gender stereotypes and societal roles prove to be a significant barrier to education in STEM and ICT. On this day, we celebrate the International Girls in ICT Day, happening every year on the fourth Thursday of April, and ITU promotes it. The event aims to create a global environment that empowers and encourages young girls and women to consider careers in ICT. The 2022 theme facilitates discussions and possibilities to overcome the access and safety barriers that girls face when they aspire to pursue STEM studies and careers. Today, we will discuss these barriers and challenges with four women in ICT. Irem Boybat, research staff member at IBM Research Zurich. Elana Pereira de Santana, PhD student at University Siegen. Fatima Rodriguez, PhD student at the Polytechnic University of Catalonia, UPC. And Nuria Castell, associate professor, now retired, at the Polytechnic University of Catalonia. Irem, Fatima, Elana and Nuria are all partners of the Whiplash Horizon 2020 project, which aims to develop an on-chip wireless communication plane to provide architectural plasticity, reconfigurability, and adaptation for any application requirements without any loss of generality. Welcome to Daughters of Marie, where we give space to our contemporary female role models. From a shy introvert in her laboratory, Maria Skłodowska-Curie, famed scientist and two-time Nobel Prize winner, was nothing short of an iconoclast. Marie influenced her daughters, yet let them blaze their own paths. Irene followed her mother's footsteps into science and was instrumental in the discovery of nuclear fission. Eve traveled the world as a foreign correspondent and then moved on to humanitarian missions. But Marie's deeds inspired women scientists for generations, who followed in her footsteps too in the past century and nowadays. With a reputation which will hardly fade in the upcoming years, Marie collected countless disciples and is the first female role model of her kind. In this podcast, we will have honest conversations with distinguished women scientists of our times, the daughters of Marie, in fact, talk about their careers, the obstacles they have encountered and still encounter as scientists, mothers, and superheroes. My name is Yelena, and I am part of the SPEAR Consortium, an inspiring group of professionals dedicating their lives to make research institutions more equal. SPEAR is a project funded under the Horizon 2020 Framework Program, with the mandate to initiate institutional change in 9 European research performing organizations by implementing gender equality plans as a key instrument to improving gender equality. What we advocate is a more gender-balanced educational environment, a strong dimension of gender in the research content, hand in hand with the reduction of structural barriers. We are here to inspire you, challenge you, and offer our community of learning as a support.
We believe in a space where your full potential is unleashed and your dreams come true. Let's meet our woman in science.
Irene Boybat is part of the in-memory computing group of IBM Research, and her current investigation focus is on developing energy-efficient artificial intelligence systems by leveraging analog in-memory computing. Irene earned her PhD degree in electrical engineering at the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. Besides being a confident public speaker, she co-authored over 35 scientific papers in journals and conferences, received 3 Best Conference Presentation Paper Poster Awards, and holds 9 granted and pending patents. Irem comes from Turkey, and she belongs to that generation that did not grow up with digital devices. When she was a kid, computers and smartphones were not yet common in private homes. She got her first computer at the age of 7, and even the simple functionalities that such a rudimentary device could offer were enough to spur her interest in the world of computers. Today, she's one of the leading researchers innovating and advancing the state of the art in the field. She discovered her passion for in-memory computing by pure coincidence during an internship at the IBM Research Laboratory in Almaden, California. Little did she know that a few years later, she would end up at IBM Research in Zurich and that her work would be published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications. When asked if her career path as a female scientist has been challenging, she says that gender has never been an issue for her in the workplace. In the end, it's about bringing like-minded scientists together to develop future technologies, she says. Elana Pereira de Santana comes from Brazil, where she obtained her bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. She grew up in a family with little to do with research, but always supportive of all her decisions. Therefore, her interest in research came very naturally during her bachelor's studies. Even though male colleagues were predominant, Elana never experienced bad situations because of her gender, neither at the engineering school nor in the working environment. Probably, as she remarks, it was because I always had firmly stood and tried not to show any sign of weakness so that people wouldn't doubt my skills. Currently, she's doing her PhD in electrical engineering at the University of Siegen. Her main research focus is on high-frequency antennas based on graphene, a two-dimensional material with distinct characteristics, which can be used to improve the performance of wireless communications, stepping into the 5G and 6G era. Elana is very passionate about her research topic. What caught her attention was the use of graphene, material she would like to get a deeper knowledge about, especially concerning its characteristics and applications for a real-world scenario outside the lab. On the same continent, but a bit further north, Fatima Rodriguez decided to study telecommunications and electronics engineering at the age of 18, a discipline considered by many as masculine and too difficult. Whether out of firmness or perhaps stubbornness, she entered the Technological University of Havana to begin her studies in the chosen field. During those years, she got involved in many research projects in the wireless communications department. She experimented and gained knowledge of broadband technologies, IoT, antenna theory, and signal processing. Unfortunately, very soon in her academic career, Fatima had to clash with a new reality, a situation that has struck the global population, the COVID-19 pandemic. Despite the outbreak, she managed to work on a publication for the university magazine and presented at the scientific conference. After finishing her master's degree at the University Carlos III of Madrid in advanced technologies for communications, she applied for an early research job at the Polytechnic University of Catalonia, which is where she's developing her PhD. Professor Núria Castel began her university studies in computer science in 1976 at the Autonomous University of Barcelona, gaining the title of one of the first graduates in computer science in Catalonia and Spain. Nuria also worked as a programmer for the computer insurance company's computing center. Again, she was the only woman on the team of about 20 people. In the 1981-82 academic year, she worked as an assistant professor at the Autonomous University of Barcelona, and from the 1982-83 academic year until her recent retirement in February 2020, she was a lecturer at the Barcelona School of Informatics. But Nuria broke other records too. In 2004, she joined the Barcelona School of Informatics Dean Team as Vice Dean for International Relations, the first woman in the field. And in 2010, she was elected Dean of the same school, a position she held for two terms until June 2017. Throughout her professional career, Nuria developed a strong interest in observing the gender gap in the field of computer science and in taking action to reduce its growth. In her first year of college, 13 women out of 400 students enrolled. At that time, the low presence of women in the classroom was not questioned, especially in STEM disciplines. During the 80s, this trend was reversed. The presence of women in computer studies grew to the point where the number of girls entering the Barcelona School of Informatics was around 40%. But in the late 80s, the trend was reversed due to multiple factors that are still being debated internationally. Professor Castell and Professor Angels Hernandez carried out the first study on the presence of women in DFIP, both among students and teachers. A collection of data from the period 1981-1993 highlighted the enrollment trend, the girls' best academic performance, and the presence of professors in the sole computer science department of the UPC. With the support of the Catalan Women's Institute, the two professors were able to present this work at the Women in Technology Conference held in Being in September 1994. Unfortunately, that downward trend has worsened over the years. In 2010, coinciding with the start of the new degrees, DFIP had the worst figure in its history. Only 6% of the 400 people enrolled in the first year were women. But Nuria also dedicated her career to something we strive to do through this podcast: the promotion and design of activities aimed at girls to awaken STEM vocations. She's actively involved in gender equality issues, and especially in actions to increase the presence of women in the field of ICT. She has participated in designing various UPC equality plans, being part of the UPC Equality Commission, and led internal projects.
So, hello to everyone. I'm very happy to have a nice conversation with four researchers from the Whiplash project. Here with us, we have Irene Boivat, we have Elana Pereira de Santana, we have Fatima Rodriguez and Nuria Castell. I'm very happy to see you here online. And luckily, we can see each other at least online, thanks to novel technologies. You're all researchers in the ICT or related fields, and you're all coming from different backgrounds, different countries, different cultures. So I'm also happy to see that there is a bit of heterogeneity in this group. I already had a chance to introduce you in the first part. So we already know a lot about you and your amazing careers. So we will start immediately with a question, which it also aims to be a bit provocative and challenging and requires a bit of creativity. So it's a question to all of you. So this year's focus on the International Girls in ICT Day, 28th of April, 2022, is on access and safety. So these are the keywords. Topics include equal access to the internet and technology, inclusivity, gender stereotypes, and safe workplace environments, and safety online. These are very complex challenges that need addressing through tools, strategies, and policies, requiring the capacities of a multidisciplinary team of experts, which is also something very typical of Horizon 2020 and Horizon Europe research innovation projects. So looking at your field, is there anything that ICT can do to solve these issues? If you were to propose an innovative solution, what would that be? So who wants to start? Nuria.
Maybe.
Yes. Break the ice.
I think that one thing that from ICT we can do is use the technology to improve visibility of women in the ICT area. And just trying to change these stereotypes and then facilitate the idea of the working in the ICT area. Of course, the problem of accessing internet can be a problem from not a gender issue, but also a social issue. Because, for instance, during the COVID pandemic, we have seen, for instance, when we close the schools, how the connection between scholars and schools was quite difficult because the poor people can cannot access to this education system based on an internet connection. So I think that there is two different questions. One is accessing, looking from the social situation of the people, and then this is something that from the maybe politics can try to solve, so helping these people. But then the question is how girls and women access to the internet. Sometimes there is some not good interest or not in the professions, and in this case about the professional ICT people, and this is something that we can change by visibilization of the women in ICT area. And also, I think maybe the one proposal for safety access to the internet is trying to educate young people and women, or especially, but young people in general, to be the also protection when you connect in the social networks and what is the information, the personal information you put in Facebook or in Twitter or whatever. So I think a big issue is education and auto protection.
Thank you, Nuria. That's actually a very good point. Recently, I was just reading about the European research area that has been launched by the European Commission. So in the need actually to also a little bit digitalize this sector, because during COVID they realized how much there was this technology gap, not only within Europe, so North versus South, but also within countries themselves. Mm-hmm. Big issue here in Italy as well. So thank you very much for pointing this out. Who else? Maybe Elena, do you want to continue?
Yeah, sure. I agree also with Nuria. I think access to information is key. And if we can be bombarded with ads based on our online search history, why can't we be bombarded with online awareness campaigns? I mean, not only related to safety, but also to all the other topics related to human equality. More information women has, especially for the young generation, it's much more likely to her to be able to see the world from a different perspective from where she is inserted and try to change her reality. Of course, society as a whole must also act regarding this by backing up women, especially the ones in dangerous situation. I mean, this is not only a women's job. And regarding safety, well, I'm not a specialist in data since I'm more into the hardware part of the communication technology, but couldn't big data be used to identify also at the beginning of online social interaction possible dangerous suspected profilers or harassment situations and already block these individuals and prevent these situations to happen without the victim having to go through the entire violence process until the reporting? I mean, I believe there are also many opportunities in this area of data science that could be used to reduce the number of cyber crimes targeting women and girls.
Thank you, Anna. Very enlightening. Who wants to maybe comment? Maybe someone agrees or wants to add something? Don't be shy. Irem?
Maybe I can. I think, my colleagues from Whiplash made, you know, very good points. One thing I think that Nuria mentioned is very interesting, and I think it came up in your introduction as well, that we do have, you know, diversity, you know, in our workspace and, you know, in the community, not only through gender, but a lot of things, including our cultural backgrounds, our, you know, origin, our personalities even make a difference along with the gender. And when we are developing, for example, you know, technologies or methods to, you know, counter all the things that we have discussed, right, on the domains of, for example, security, inclusivity, it is, I think, very important to have an inclusive team that kind of develops these technologies, these policies, these strategies, because everyone has a different perspective coming from, you know, all these differences we mentioned, you know, gender just being one. And by looking at, you know, the views or having different views associated with our backgrounds, we can come up with different solutions to custom the needs. If you, for example, take a perspective from a woman from safety, or if you take a look at, for instance, in COVID, if you take a look at other, you know, sectors of sections of the world that are more affected, if all the voices are kind of raised in where, you know, the policies and technologies are being developed, and, you know, from a research perspective, this would imply that if we have researchers, you know, from diverse backgrounds all kind of participating in developing these solutions, I think we can, you know, get different angles and, you know, hope to address the situations in a more comprehensive manner.
Thank you, Rem. Yeah, this is another point of this multidisciplinary approach to addressing big challenges that we're facing nowadays. Fatima, you're the last one.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I totally agree with everything my colleagues just say. I think that is also a matter of visibility, because if you can see yourself represented in someone, how can you... I want to be an engineer, and then people think that you are a train conductor or, you know, something that has nothing to do with what you really do. And it's a matter of also of feel represented that we don't have that much, so we can use. We can use technology to make ourselves more represented in those fields.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what we're also trying do actually with this podcast, and in general, not only with this episode, but also the previous episodes that we had. And we really hope that we will raise awareness and actually also, let's say, inspire girls and women to start this career in STEM fields. The next question is actually for Elana and Fatima. Because as young researchers, I'm really interested to hear from you. How did COVID-19 affect your career? So to what extent did you feel the impact of the pandemic on your research work? Maybe Elana can start.
Yes, for me, it had quite of an impact because I started my PhD when the pandemic started. That was February 2020. And I just had started my research, so I had a lot of open questions, and I could not have the people around me to ask or to discuss, especially with my group colleagues. So it was actually very hard. And also the fact that my country was very affected by the pandemic made my stress levels go very high. So it was also very hard to focus on my activities. I mean, I could only focus more on simulations and preparing my activities. I also have a lot of work that needs to be done inside the lab, and I could not go to the university to do my experiments. So it was quite hard, but at least I could use this time to prepare myself a little bit more. And also during these two past years, we could not be able to meet in presence. So I really felt this. I think it's very valuable when we discuss about our topics with people working in the same field as us. So yeah, I hope this is ending soon.
Yeah, I hope it too. Actually, that's interesting that ICT helped us continue to some extent and make our everyday work actually possible. In the previous episode, I had a very nice conversation with Yeva Plikušenje, and she's a researcher who actually was one of the few researchers able to go to the lab, because she was developing the antigen tests for COVID-19. So she contributed to that. So this is one exception, but unfortunately not everyone could go to the lab and continue with the everyday work. What about you, Fatima?
Well, when COVID pandemic strike, I was in my final year of college. So I don't know if you know, but in my country, internet is expensive and very, very slow. So I have to do my final thesis to get graduate almost alone by the phone. I remember one day I was talking to my tutor about my results on the phone, and that was really challenging. I got really anxious because I wasn't sure, you know, it's the first time you're doing such a big research work, because in the end, the final thesis is a research work and you kind of have to do it a bit by yourself, and that was really challenging. And then I applied to a scholarship to study my master's degree in Universidad Carlos III de Madrid, and because of the COVID pandemic delays, my visa was not ready and I almost lost my scholarship, my master. I had to make two semesters in one because I arrived so late that I almost lose it. So it was really, really challenging. And like Alana said, I haven't been able to meet everyone. I started my PhD in September, last September. And things are a bit better now, but since I'm here and everything, internet connection is much better. But it was very, very challenging for me. Yeah.
Thank you, Fatima, for sharing. Also, this is good to see, because actually, it's in line with what also Nuria was saying about access. Thank you very much. But I'm glad that in the end, it got solved somehow. And I really hope that you will continue your career smoothly in the upcoming years.
Thank you. Me too.
So the next question is for Irem, and be prepared. It's quite long because I need a bit of introduction. So you have experience as a mentor at the IBM Female Mentoring Program at the University of Stuttgart. So mentoring supporters believe that this activity helps junior employees develop leadership skills, increase self-confidence, improve emotional intelligence, and navigate the gender-specific obstacles to career advancement. However, the opponents have criticized mentoring programs for focusing on the fixing the women, as this program implied that women need training in masculine competences to be more successful while paying limited attention to changing gender organizational norms and work practices that reproduce persisting gender inequalities. So basically just fixing women, but trying to fix them in a way that they become closer look like men. So my question to you is, what is your perspective on this approach? How can mentoring help women in STEM?
Thank you very much for the question. I believe that mentoring, everybody can benefit from mentoring, not only females, but as you have mentioned, this is a way for more senior researchers, more senior experts to pass out their experience to more junior counterparts. And as a result, I believe that, and as a mentor who I do have mentees, both female mentees and also male mentees, and that is why interacting and, you know, working with, you know, different mentees overall throughout the years, and also working with, you know, students as researchers throughout the years, I think it is a very good opportunity for every, you know, junior person to grow in their field. So I look at, you know, mentoring, you know, more of a bigger context apart from gender. And in these mentoring programs, you have the option of, you know, discussing or learning about different career opportunities, different directions for growth, both from a technical perspective and also from a personal perspective that will help you, you know, leverage new skills again in the technical domain. One, for example, maybe observation I can bring out is, you know, when I, for instance, you know, go to conferences or, you know, technical encounters with my, you know, male colleagues from the company, very interestingly, I get more questions, or let's say females tend to come and, you know, approach me more. And I believe this is just that we do have a bit more, or let's say we share a bit more common ground with them. And common ground can be anything. So common ground can be, you know, coming from a similar culture, graduating from same schools. And that is why maybe it's easier to relate mentees themselves to relate with, you know, their mentors. But in general, I believe that it is very beneficial for, you know, every junior to have, you know, such an experience to talk about their technical, you know, problems, and to get an idea of, you know, different availabilities or different options in their careers waiting for them in the future. I think I consider it more as an experience or experience passing through the new generation of researchers, scientists, experts, so on and so forth.
Okay, is it the first time that someone is asking you such a question?
Sorry?
Is this the first time that someone like me has asked you an opinion about these mentoring programs? Did it already happen that they criticized maybe the mentoring program even in front of you?
This is actually the first time I'm answering this question.
Okay. Nuria, I have also a question for you, but I also would like to hear your opinion on the previous question that I made to Irem, because you have also such a long-standing experience. What is your opinion on the previous question?
Thanks for that question, because I have some comments. some examples. From UPC, we started the program M2M, big M, number two, small M. Mm-hmm. And this is a program that 12 years ago we started, and it's a program between, it's a mentoring program for girls that are finishing the studies in UPC, maybe a bachelor, or a master, or a PhD. So it's in the moment that the student will left the university, more or less, and is a relation, a pair relation between this student and a professional, you know, a woman that is a professional, normally is a UPC professional, and is this idea how to go to the labor market. So how you present yourself in a meeting, or what are the career opportunities. But is this the idea of giving your experience as a professional to the future professionals? Because one thing we have, I think all of us know, that is the normally girls, women try to not to be too much expressive with the proper skills. So there are some kind of perception that we need to be prudent or whatever. So and for instance, when there is a job offer and you have you see that the job offer, this is a list of skills that is important, or knowledge that is important that the candidates can have. A girl, women, if check the list and the list is not fulfilled at 90%, she doesn't apply. While men, if this is a 50%, they will apply. So this is something we have been studying, so it's normal. So this kind of learn is important that we pass to the young people, to the young female professionals, because, well, you can understand how to move in the professional situation. And also another thing with about mentoring, and in this case is a mentoring in the school. So in Spain, we have several programs going for mentoring, normally it's a group mentoring in primary schools. Just professionals, female professionals, women that go to the schools to show how is your professional, what did you study, what are you doing in the company or at the university, or just to share experience. And this is this sharing experience that is a good point for kids, for girls, for women.
Yeah, so it should start from an early stage, actually.
But in fact, we had activities at UPC. We started activities for promoting studies so many years. And the promotion was in the higher school. But this study shows that we need to, if we want to break stereotypes, we need to go in primary schools. So, and this is why there is a lot of activities, a lot of programs now in primary school.
Yeah, and I fully agree. It's really related to what you just said, because you have been very active and very, very much involved in the design and innovation of educational programs at the UPC level, and also within the framework of European projects, including gender equality issues and the participation of women in ICT. So can you share with us some of the observations that you made in your long and very prolific career?
Well, yes, maybe just two different aspects. One is about gender equality plans that we have. In the case of UPC, it's about since 2008 or something like that, we have gender equality plans. We started, we had a European project, GICO project, that was to deal with gender equality in the higher education institutions at the European level, especially in terms of management and how the research what that team research. And one curious thing during this project was between 2012 and 2017, more or less. And one thing we made was, was a survey between an internal survey between the teachers and also between the administration staff. And the perception of the situation was very different if you were asking men or women. So for the men, in general, they thought that the situation was quite equal. So the equality of opportunities or the teams were working more or less in the same equal way, while the perception of women was really very different. So it was interesting that after so many years doing equality plans, still the perception and the situation was different. So this is something what we learned from this project. And one thing that was a result of this project was that now we are working with the inclusion of the equality mainstream, the gender equality or the gender perspective, the gender mainstream in the academic situation, not only in the classroom, but also between the teacher, between the staff, and in the regional area. So this is something that more and more we are trying to include, because this is also that will affect if we use this, we have this gender mainstream in the classroom, we are also helping the students get this gender issue in mind. So this is one thing. And the other thing that I would like to mention is for new programs, when we develop new curricula, so we have the problem, for instance, in studies, we have informatics engineering, which is a compendium of computer science, computer engineering, information system. We call this informatics. In informatics engineering, we have a low level of female students. This is something we are fighting to have more female students in informatics engineering. But just this year, we started a new degree program. The degree program is artificial intelligence. And the promoting of the actions promoting this program were designed to taking care of this gender message. and trying to help to better understand which is the profession that you will get after this following this degree, taking this degree. And thanks to this kind of promotion, at this first year, we have 40% of students, female students, while in informatics we have 14. So instead of 14. So the message that we involve anything, it's very important. So this is why when discuss about the situation of women in technology, sometimes we talk about the media, the message we see in TV, in films and whatever. For the promotion of the new degrees, it is important to take care of this message, how to promote and how to, what is the message you give to the candidates.
Thank you, Nuria. So actually, I've been quite involved in gender projects in the past 3 years. So my experience is not that long. But something that I have to admit is that many Spanish universities are very active in gender-related projects. And many Spanish universities have good gender equality plans or are implementing good quality of gender equality plans. So that's a very good point of view for you, actually, as a Spanish representative of this group. On the other hand, something else that I noticed also working with gender equality plans is that when it comes to STEM fields, it seems there is also discrepancy between West and East Europe. And it feels like that in Eastern Europe, there are more women in STEM than in West Europe. And it has something to do with culture, definitely. I remember when I was young, my grandparents were telling me, well, during communism, during socialism here, I come from Serbia, so the former Yugoslavia, here women and men were encouraged to pursue careers in the same way. There was no difference. So they were all encouraged to pursue the career they want to pursue. And this is something that stayed even after the dissolution of the socialist period and the former Yugoslavia. So even right now, actually, there are a lot of women in ICT in Serbia who unfortunately go to work abroad because in Serbia we don't have good opportunities when it comes to these fields. So we export brains abroad and we don't let our country grow from that point of view. But this is another thing that I actually noticed in these years. Okay, so thank you very much. Do you have anything else you would like to say to comment on, some comment on what Nuria said or in general?
If you don't mind, I would like to add something about the interdisciplinary programs. So yes. We have experience with a project also, European project, was the Health Eurocampus. And the program was an academic program, and the idea was develop material for subjects for a master level for improving the knowledge about the health area. In people in ICT engineering studies. And the program, of course, was part of developing the material and so on. But then every summer, we have a summer school. And the summer school was organized putting together people from the engineering area and people from the health area. So people studying nursery or physics or whatever. So, the experience was very, very interesting and very nice because you have people that has this engineering knowledge to try to solve health problems. And then you have the developer and the client for saying something. And this helped to understand the language of the other people because sometimes and I like informatics because you can work in any area but you need to understand the language of the people in the other area, and this needs some training. And of course, in this case, when we mix people from ICT engineering studies and people from health studies, we have more men in one area and more women in the other. So at the end, the teams were quite balanced, and it was really a very nice experience in terms of knowledge, but in terms of also in human understanding. And I think it's something that in general the studies, the official studies, don't promote, but the interdisciplinary studies are can be very useful for the society.
I totally agree. I don't know about Whiplash, but many of these Horizon Europe projects actually are interdisciplinary, and this is very much stressed out, and European Commission wants to see that. And it's also an opportunity for you as a researcher to get to know other fields and how they work, how you can actually complement each other and come, let's say, produce innovations that are actually complex solutions to complex challenges at the same time. Thank you very much, Nuria. Thank you, Ilana and Fatima. It was very, very nice having this conversation with you.
We hope you enjoyed our podcast and conversation with Irem, Nuria, Fatima, and Ilana. If we have inspired you at least a bit, we can say that we are one inch closer to achieving our aims. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under Spear Project. Follow us and stay tuned. The next episode will be launched soon. Thank you for listening.